Welcome back, everybody, to our Global Industrial Aerospace and Defense Conference. I'm very happy to announce that we have Worthington Industries here. For those of you not familiar, they are a North American processor of carbon flat rolled steel. They are the largest global producer of pressure cylinders. They've recently acquired an engineered cab business, and they've got a number of favorable joint venture opportunities that I'm sure we'll be talking about. With that, I'd like to turn it over to Andy Rose at Worthington's CFO. Andy?
Welcome, everyone. As Luke said, my name is Andy Rose. I'm the Chief Financial Officer of Worthington Industries. I've been with the company a little over 3.5 years, and what I want to do today is just provide a quick overview of the company and also give you a flavor for why now is an interesting time to consider Worthington as an investment. There's been a lot of change inside our business over the last 3 years, and it's starting to be reflected in our financial performance. Let me see here. There we go. I'm going to start on page two. Who are we today? Worthington Industries is a metals manufacturing business with revenues that come primarily from four different areas. The first being our steel processing business. We're the U.S. domestic leader in steel, flat-rolled steel processing, about an 8% market share in that business. We believe we're the largest manufacturer of pressure cylinders in the world. Market shares in that space range anywhere from 30% on the low end all the way up to 90% plus in some of our product lines. Our most recent business that we acquired in December of this past year is our engineered cabs business. They manufacture cabs for heavy equipment, customers like John Deere, Caterpillar, CNH. And then the fourth area where we generate a fair amount of income comes from our joint venture portfolio. We have 10 joint ventures, six sizable ones that principally serve the automotive and construction end markets, and I'll talk a little bit about more specifically those products. We were founded in 1955. We are primarily a non-union company. Around 7% of our facilities are union. Those principally came from acquisitions. And very strong culture with a corporate philosophy that's centered around employees, customers, suppliers, and investors. Why Worthington now? There's really three principal reasons that you should be interested in Worthington as an investment right now. The first is a process we started about 3 years ago we call our transformation, which is where we have changed the way we run our business to become much more of a metric-driven company. I'm going to talk more specifically about what that means. But it is improving the profitability of every business that we own. The second is capital allocation. We have renewed our focus on allocating capital to the businesses and the end markets that generate the highest rates of return for our company. That flows through our M&A strategy, our share repurchase strategy, our dividend strategy, and our portfolio management strategy, meaning the businesses that we buy and the businesses that we sell because we don't believe that they're going to meet those higher thresholds. And then finally, we have a long history of positive free cash flow and a strong financial position to execute on that strategy. Right here, just a couple of the end markets. There's a breakout of our end markets from our fiscal 2012, which ended in May of this year. You can see our largest end market is automotive, second, leisure and recreation, and third, construction. Construction typically is our second largest end market because of that, where that business has been, the commercial construction market. It's down. Really, the takeaway from this slide is as we execute on our strategy to grow the company, we will be diversifying our end markets into the higher growth areas that we think are attractive going forward. The next page is just our consolidated operating results for the last 3 years. And while you look at the top line, particularly in the last year, it doesn't look like it's changed substantially. The reason for that is we have been divesting ourselves of assets that and businesses, I guess, that are not meeting our performance thresholds. We want every business that we own to at least return its cost of capital on an annual basis. We want it to be EVA positive. Secondly, we want every business that we own to have a credible growth strategy that we think we can double the business over a reasonable period of time. If a business is not meeting that test and we don't believe we can get it there, we're going to take action on that business. And so you've seen us make several moves. The largest was with our metal framing business, where we moved it into a joint venture and merged it with a competitor to put those businesses in a better competitive position, and then reinvest that capital in businesses where we can meet those thresholds. And so there's been a lot of changeover in our revenue base where we've moved those businesses out. We've also done a fair number of acquisitions. We'll touch on, we've spent about $380 million over the last 3 years acquiring new businesses to replace that revenue. And so what you're seeing is, while the revenue doesn't look like it's changed substantially, our profit margins are actually going up. And if you look here, you can see our EBITDA is essentially flat over those 2 years. The other thing I'll point out when you get in and understand our company is the movement in steel prices affects our profit margins. And so in 2010 and 2011, there were substantially rising steel prices, which enhances our margins. In 2012, we actually had a declining steel price environment. And so the combination of those two swings between 11 and 12 affected our profit by over $35 million. So the underlying performance of our businesses is getting better, and we expect to see that continue to improve. The next chart is just our capitalization. We have total debt of $534 million as of our fiscal year end. That's actually been trending down, so a little less than 2 times debt to EBITDA at this point. We also have you don't see it on this page, but we have a very strong capital base. We have $250 million of long-term debt at an average rate of about 5.5%. We also just renewed our $435 million revolving credit facility for 5 years, where we borrow money at a little less than 1.5%. So low interest costs to finance some of the activities that we're doing. I'm not going to spend too much time on this chart. Most of you probably have some sense the automotive market has been recovering nicely, and because of our exposure in the steel processing segment, where it's over 50% of the revenue in that particular segment, we've been benefiting from that, and that we expect that trend to continue. I also touched on the movement in steel prices. Just to reiterate, you see in 10 and 11 a rising steel price environment, which is good for us. In fiscal 12, the slope of that curve is a downward steel price environment. A couple of important points here. We don't speculate on steel prices. We don't buy steel when we think it's cheap and, you know, try and sell it when it's high. We run what we call a balanced risk position in steel, in fact, for all of our commodities. You know, when we sell steel to a customer, we price it. We match that off with a contract from a mill. And so the volatility in our earnings from the movement in steel prices is actually not because of our committed pricing. It's actually because of the base inventory we have in our system, which is the inventory we need, or the float in our system, to run our business. And so as a FIFO accounting company, as that flows through, we get either higher or lower margins depending on the movement in steel prices. We actually also have been a pioneer in using the steel futures market. We use that to provide longer-term fixed prices to our customers. For those of you that follow the steel market, you'll be aware that, you know, in the early 2000s, when iron ore went off of annual contracts, steel price volatility increased dramatically. And, you know, our largest customers are automotive companies that price their cars on a model year basis. There are appliance companies that price their products on an annual basis. And so they need that price certainty. And so we can get monthly or quarterly fixed prices from mills, but we can provide 12 to 15, 18 month fixed prices using the futures market. And so we have a very active trading desk that's using that tool to give us a competitive advantage in the marketplace. Page 10 is our strategy, really, to continue to develop and maintain market-leading businesses. You heard me talk about almost every business we own is a leader in its market. Second is drive higher margins and higher profitability in our business through the transformation, which I'm going to touch on here in a minute. And then thirdly, continue to grow through acquisitions. We fundamentally believe that it is an attractive time to be out acquiring companies. You buy businesses during recession and during the early stages of recovery when there's less competition, the credit markets are less active, you can buy businesses on lower earnings bases at lower multiples. It's the time to create value through that strategy. And so we've spent over $380 million in the last 3 years, and we'll continue to pursue that as long as we can find value. In terms of our operating goals, you can see we want to continue to focus on driving higher margins, higher free cash flow in our business, and that's a goal for every decision that we make. Where we are today, we are in the final two stages of what you see on this page. During the downturn, we focused on stabilizing our business, but we are very much optimizing, improving the performance of our businesses, and growing both organically and through acquisition. The way we're improving our existing businesses is our transformation strategy. Four and a half years ago, our CEO was frustrated by the fact that we were able to grow our top line, but our operating income and margin was not following suit. So he did something that had never been done before inside the company, which is he brought in an outside consulting firm to help us figure out a way or develop a strategy to drive increasing margins in our business. What that meant for us was focusing on four primary work streams, which you can see up here: operations, commercial, supply chain, and culture. It's not rocket science here. What essentially happened was pretty substantial for us, though, as a company. The consulting firm came in and said, looking across all these disciplines, what are the 70 or 80 different metrics that drive performance in your business? They would identify those metrics, measure where we are today or baseline it, and then set goals for where we should be, looking at, peers, looking at world class, and then putting a process in place to drive us towards achieving those goals. The metrics we use now on a daily basis on the shop floor, weekly and monthly financial reports, we have what we call quarterly business reviews, where we produce for every plant in the businesses that have been through this so far, a 100-page deck with all the metrics where we're reporting out to senior leadership on a quarterly basis. So we've gone from a company that essentially reported financial results and looked at how we did to measuring every metric that we think can affect the financial performance of the company. We've become a higher-performing, metric-driven culture, and more importantly, we're a profit-sharing company. We've tied the performance of the or the achievement of those metrics to compensation. And we've seen a substantial improvement in the performance in our steel company, which is where this process started. I mentioned we go plant by plant in steel. We completed the process about a year and a half ago. We are in our fourth plant in our cylinder business with 14 to go. With 14 total, so we've got about 10 to go. And then we just kicked it off in our third business unit, the engineered cab segment. So it's been a terrific process for us. Still a ways to go in terms of unlocking the value that we expect to accomplish here. And then the second component that I mentioned was efficient capital allocation. We've been very active over the last 3 years in a couple of different areas. First is acquiring companies. You've heard me touch on that. We've made over $380 million of acquisitions. Those companies are going to generate significant operating income for us in this fiscal year. We've also been active buying back our own stock. We've spent over $230 million and reduced our shares outstanding by 17% at an average price of $16.63. We believe in the transformation and the value that we're creating, and we're trying to generate additional value for our shareholders by repurchasing our own stock. And then finally, we have long-term committed financing, which you heard me touch on, to help us execute that. So we feel like we have all the pieces of the puzzle in place. The next couple of pages are our steel processing business. I don't want to spend too much time here. Maybe just touch on the growth strategy of this company. As the largest steel processor in this country, we are the leader in cold rolled carbon strip, which is a higher margin niche opportunity in the steel processing segment. As automotive volumes return and construction volumes return, the steel processing business will benefit from that. We also are trying to take the higher margin, higher value added segments of steel processing internationally. So we expect additional growth from that. And then we've also been searching and acquiring business in some new end markets, principally the energy, agriculture, and infrastructure markets. You can see, again, the profitability of this business. While the revenue has increased and the volumes have increased, this year our margins were down slightly, but again, remember back to the declining steel prices this year versus the rising steel prices last year. If you adjust those FIFO gains and losses out, we are generating increased profitability in our steel company. The second segment I touched on is our pressure cylinder business. We believe we're the largest manufacturer in the world in this space. Revenues principally come from three areas: the industrial gas segment, which is about 49% of the revenue, our retail products, which are about 44%, and then alternative fuels, which are about 7%. That's about a $60 million business. Industrial gas is, as you might expect, selling into the industrial gas, the manufacturing market, tends to be more of a GDP-driven business. The retail products, which have been expanding significantly for us, principally through acquisition, are products that are sold, branded products, through big box retail, Home Depot, Lowe's, Walmart. This is an exciting area for us because as this product line has expanded, there are additional brand extension, brand management opportunities. We recently did something that's a little unusual for Worthington's history. We hired a 30-year veteran of Procter & Gamble as a brand manager to come in and really leverage these brands and help us drive innovation and product development and brand extensions. And we think this segment of our business can grow in the mid-single digits pretty consistently over the next 5 to 10 years as a result of that. The third segment is the alternative fuel space, which is the newest and the fastest growing at least double digits globally. We've acquired three companies in this space, one in Poland, one in India, and one in California. They make compressed natural gas and liquefied propane gas cylinders for the commercial transportation market and the passenger market. In certain countries throughout the world, this is very prevalent. In our country, it is emerging very rapidly at this point, particularly driven by some of the commercial transportation companies' fleet vehicles, as well as long-haul trucking companies want to be in this, want their vehicles fueled by natural gas because the cost discrepancy is as much as 40 cents on the dollar relative to gasoline. So substantial growth expected in this market. In terms of the financial performance of this business, again, the top line is growing principally through our acquisition strategy. There are three things that impacted performance in fiscal 12 that are noteworthy. One is we had a recall of one of our cylinders that cost about $10 million, which was fully accrued during the year. Those are unique events. I think we've only ever had one other one in the history of the company, but something we felt like we needed to do. The second is higher input costs in the middle of the year. You may recall propane and some of the other inputs into the manufacturing process and some of the tanks that we sell, the gases that we put in them, were very high mid-year. And it takes a quarter or so to pass those costs through to our customers. We can do that. It just takes time. Some of the contracts have a lag. And so as a result, you saw declining margins. This business, those input costs have actually returned to more normalized levels. And, you know, we expect this business to return to sort more normalized margins. And in conjunction with the retail growth, the alternative fuels growth, we're very excited about the prospects of this business. This is also the focus of our acquisition strategy. We can go out and we can add product lines, we can add new geographies, and we can consolidate market share. These are typically 50, 60, $70 million acquisitions that we can buy at 6 times EBITDA or less. There almost always are synergies on the purchasing side. We can oftentimes plug them into our existing sales force. So these are excellent consolidation plays that are very, very accretive to our shareholders, and we expect to continue to look for these and close transactions in this space. The final business is our engineered cab space, which essentially is a highly engineered product. We engineer and manufacture cabs for heavy equipment for customers that I mentioned earlier. We're part of their supply chain. This is a business where once we go out and become a supplier of choice for these customers, we typically have this product for the life of the model year, which can range anywhere from 4 to 8 years. So there is some nice stickiness to the revenue. This also is a market that's been growing very quickly, both domestically and internationally, and is expected to continue growing. This was a nice business that we were able to buy. It was an ESOP that was looking for a larger corporate partner because their customers are demanding that they continue to grow not only domestically but also internationally. And so we were able to provide some of the resources to help them do that. Very nice business, meets our criteria for being higher margin, higher return on capital. So we're pretty excited about the prospects of having the engineered cabs business with us. I'll just caution, this is not the true profitability of this business, because when you buy a business, you all know we have purchase accounting, which lasts for 2 or 3 months, and so you've got a little bit of masking that. The first full quarter of reporting was our fiscal fourth quarter, which just happened, if you take a look at that. The other significant component of our income is our joint venture portfolio, which, as you can see here, contributed $93 million of equity income last year. We also get somewhere between 80 and 90% of that equity income in the form of dividends, so it's a cash-generating portfolio of joint ventures. The largest of those is a company called Wave, which makes grid ceiling. If you're ever in an office building and you see the grid ceiling, Wave is the market leader in this country with about a 50% market share in an industry that has a strong number two in USG. And very high profit margins, very high free cash flow, significant opportunities to continue to take that product line internationally. They're very focused on innovation, taking labor out. They also have a unique sales strategy in terms of trying to get the product spec'd into the building, so it's not a commodity building product. It's something that people want and are willing to pay for. They've been very successful at continuing to raise their margins in a declining construction environment. Their business has gone from 50-50 new construction remodel to about 80% remodel in this market, not surprising. So we feel like as the commercial construction market returns, they've got some nice upside. The other product that they have that's pretty interesting and in the early stages of being rolled out is a product called DC Flex Zone, where they've electrified the grid using DC power. You think about windmills, solar panels, they use DC power. Right now, most places convert it to AC, lots of energy loss. They can actually run those power sources directly to the grid. Wave has an alliance of companies that have developed lots of products you can plug in there. And so it fits with a lot of the green building technology that's driving the construction market right now. I'll just touch on a couple of the other joint ventures. ClarkDietrich, which is a company we used to wholly own, which wasn't meeting our performance standards, so we have now moved that into a joint venture, merged it with its largest competitor, and put it in a much better competitive position. We have a Mexican steel processing joint venture. We have a laser welding joint venture with Thyssen. And we have an automotive stamping and low-cost tooling operation with a company called International Tooling Solutions. The new company is now called Artiflex. So you heard me mention about $90 million of equity income, a very strong portfolio for us, and it's been a successful strategy. So finally, just to close, you know, as you think about Worthington and an investment opportunity, we're in the midst of transforming our business, making our existing businesses more profitable through transformation. We're allocating capital efficiently through acquisitions, through share repurchases, and if we can get a little help from the economy, that's just a bonus. Since the timer just ran out, I guess you'll have to come to the after hours or the next session for questions.
Yeah, we'll have Worthington will be hosting a breakout session in the Carnegie Room. And Kathy, are you taking a break off for lunch, or is it 12:30? Is it 12? It's actually it's at 12 o'clock. Thank you.
Thank you.